This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Algae may not seem particularly threatening, but get enough of it together in a body of water and you have something called an algae bloom. And these blooms can be toxic. They can damage life in the water, in anybody or anything that comes into contact with the water. Hans Perl is a professor of marine and environmental sciences at UNC Chapel Hill Institute of Marine Sciences at Moorhead City. He studies toxic algae, and he joins us now to talk more about it. Hans, welcome.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well, but tell us about, but how about our waterways? Tell us about toxic algae. First of all, what is it?
Well, the algae are made up of several groups. The most notorious ones are the blue-green algae or cyanobacteria. They tend to be very problematic in freshwater systems. And then in the marine environment, we have, of course, the red tide types of algae, which are true algae. They're called dinoflagellates. The ones that are really causing the biggest havoc, so to speak, in terms of water quality and water use are the blue-green algae, because they infest waters that affect drinking water reservoirs, recreational areas. And they are now on the march in some of our largest lakes worldwide, including lakes that we've been studying in China. And it's largely a result of excessive human nutrient inputs, particularly nitrogen and phosphorus. But there's also a climate twist to it, and that is that in regions where there's warming going on, and that would be particularly in the higher latitude regions of the Earth, the northern and southern regions. That warming of waters also benefits cyanobacteria or blue-green algae, because they like it warm. They like it hot, so to speak. And so their growth rates are accelerated by warming. And then if you throw a high amount of nutrients into that mix, you end up with algae blooms that are now proliferating in many places, not only in developing countries, but in well-developed regions like Europe and North America.
So to be clear now, we've got algae, which is a naturally occurring phenomenon, and it feeds on, again, more natural sources, nutrients like nitrogen. So what's the downside? What happens when these things bloom, and what's the effect on us when there's a lot of it in one place?
Right. Well, you know, we like to have nutrients in our water bodies because that's what it really takes to support algae, to basically support the base of the food chain. The problem is when we get too much nutrients, we get too much of a good thing, so to speak, and we get these excessive growths of algae that cannot be consumed by the organisms that normally consume them, like the zooplankton and small fish. And as a result, you get these massive accumulations of algae in the water. They're problematic for a variety of reasons, one of which is that, you know, they're not very nice to look at, so there's an aesthetic issue with them. Secondly, they can cause low oxygen problems. When the algae die and sink to the bottom of many systems, they consume lots of oxygen, and that can lead to fish kills and odors and other negative effects. And then thirdly, they produce metabolites that are toxic. These algal toxins can range from compounds that just make you sick maybe for a day or so, leading to intestinal distress, while others can lead to more permanent problems like liver problems, including liver cancer. And then there's a group of algal toxins that can induce neurological problems similar to Alzheimer's symptoms. So there are lots of reasons why we don't want to have these blooms in our lakes, particularly ones that are water supplies and support recreational activity and fisheries. And all three of those are going on in Lake Taihu in China, this lake which is the third largest lake in China that has changed from a pristine bloom-free condition back in the 70s and 80s to now having these blooms for about 9 months out of the year. And you can actually see these blooms if you look at a satellite image of the lake. The lake's big enough where you can actually see the lake turning green during the summertime due to this bloom problem.
So global warming is part of the answer here, or part of the problem. But what about the nutrients? Where are they coming from?
Well, most of the nutrients come from two major sources, what we call point sources, such as wastewater treatment plants, that are discharging untreated nutrients into systems, industry, and factories. And then the other major source is what we call non-point sources. They're diffuse sources, such as runoff from agriculture, stormwater runoff from urban regions, effects of changes in land use, like converting forests to farmland. The second that second category, the non-point sources, are actually the more difficult one to get at because, you know, they are diffuse sources, but often they make up for the greatest amount of nutrients that are now coming into our waterways.
So what, and you talked about water treatment plants. I was hoping that was going to be the solution. You said it's part of the problem, but can't these toxins be treated in water treatment plants?
Well, water treatment comes in different grades, you know. In some situations, the waste is just centralized, and then it's discharged into a water body without any treatment at all, and that's the problem in many developing countries. And then the second order of treatment is to try to remove the nutrients, and usually phosphorus is easier to remove than nitrogen, so that's the first nutrient to be treated. But it turns out that nitrogen is a major part of the problem in many of these lakes. And then thirdly, these toxins and other metabolites that are produced by algae are not that easy to remove at a wastewater treatment plant. It takes quite sophisticated technology to remove those nutrients. So often, even if you can remove the nitrogen and phosphorus, the toxins will still go through the waste, through the nutrient treatment process and end up in the water supplies.
So you are doing a lot of work in China. How seriously are they taking this there, and are they doing anything to minimize this and any abatement programs?
Well, one reason we're there is because the Chinese government invited us to come there and work with their scientists on dealing with this problem, and particularly dealing with the large lake systems which supply most of the drinking water in China. Most of the drinking water in China comes from surface water. It doesn't come from well water. Lake Taihu is kind of the poster child of this problem right now. It's the third largest lake in China. It's about 2,300 square kilometers. It's huge, and it supplies the drinking water needs for about 20 million people living in that basin, in the Taihu Basin. Mm. It's very close to Shanghai, by the way, and you can see it, like I said, you can see it on a remote sensing picture. So back in 2007, the blooms on the lake became so severe that they overwhelmed the drinking water plants for two major cities on the lake, Wuxi and Suzhou. Each one of them has 5 million people living in it. And one morning, folks woke up in these cities to find this green jello-like material coming out of their faucets, and on top of it all, it smelled terrible.
Yeah.
So folks refused to drink the water. For good reasons, and led to a big water crisis where the central government had to basically supply the water needs for about 10 million people in these two cities,
yeah.
Leading to a major crisis that got, you know, things in motion. And we ended up basically initially with some EPA funds from the U.S. to work with the Chinese, and now the National Science Foundation is funding a major problem, a collaborative program with the Chinese to address this problem. You know, and one reason the National Science Foundation is interested in this, and also EPA, is that Taihu is really kind of a looking glass for how bad things can get in other places.
Well, let me ask you about that right now in North Carolina. How bad is it?
Well, North Carolina has not achieved the notoriety yet that we see in Lake Taihu. But we do have water reservoirs that have these cyanobacteria in them, and we know that the cyanobacteria are the types that can produce these toxins. It's not as obvious as Taihu. We don't, you know, see massive green paint-like scums on our lakes yet, but we know the algae are there, and there have been episodes in North Carolina where, in fact, we have had blooms, and there have been restrictions on using the water at times when toxin levels are high. And North Carolina is not unique in that. That's popping up all over the country, as well as in Canada, Europe, and Central America. So, you know, we are, you know, we're seeing the symptoms of
right.
the increase in this bloom phenomenon.
So what can be done?
Well, there are several knobs you can tweak. We can't change the climate knob very fast, so, you know, we have to assume that we're going to live in a warmer world where the opportunity for these blooms to break out is going to be higher.
You can outlaw it, like we did here in North Carolina.
Yeah, we can.
All right, but keep going.
But that takes time, too, I think. The knobs we can tweak are the nitrogen and the phosphorus knobs. Those are really the two that are controllable. So what we're looking at in Taihu and also in other lakes is to essentially help the governments formulate nutrient input restrictions so that we can get these systems below the bloom threshold. That is, you know, allow enough nutrients to come into these systems to support the fertility, but avoid loadings or inputs that will exceed that bloom threshold. So that's really where we come into the picture with using experimental techniques to essentially address these problems in large lakes like Taihu and also in North America and Europe.
Hans, thanks so much for talking with us.
You're welcome, Frank.
Fascinating research. Hans Perl, a professor of marine and environmental sciences at the UNC Chapel Hill Institute of Marine Sciences in Morehead City. Coming up, the controversy over genetically modified foods. Stay with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.